Terry Savage, terrysavage.com, the syndicated financial columnist. What's on your mind?
I want to find out what's coming on at 12:45 about the ducks. Because if you forget the mammoth meatball,
yeah,
I want to know if you're giving duck recipes. And if you are, goodbye.
I don't think that's what he's doing. I don't think it's duck recipes. I think it's something else.
Oh, I hope so.
Well, you and I are going to be on the air when the report runs, so let's make sure we listen in. How's that sound?
Okay.
And if it's not what you like, then you give him a piece of your mind. You understand?
I won't come back after the break. So you're the one that with the switch to turn off the mic.
The pressure's on Terry Savage. Terry, I think that people have a lot of questions about their taxes, what with April 18th looming. And then there's always questions about T-bills and I-bonds. It does seem as though the dust has settled on the financial world. There's no fires to put out today. Am I right about that?
You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's a little bit of smoke all around. It's not just in the markets. Interest rates have leveled off. Six-month T-bills, our favorite thing. That's how we kind of measure it on this show anyway. 4.9%. The 10-year, a little over 3.5%. Stock market, not doing much of anything. So what are the headlines? Well, Congress is at it again. They're trying to do more regulation. They've got the head of Starbucks testifying that he's not trying to stop unions, but that you got that going on in Congress. Yesterday we had the president responding to McCarthy saying, well, this is all on you, Mr. President. He said, no, I put out my budget. You show us where you want to cut if that's what you want to do. And it kind of gets people a little bit uneasy about the debt ceiling confrontation coming up. But right now, everybody's just, it's like a tightrope. Everybody's kind of tilting to one side, tilting the other. Doesn't look like we're going to fall off either side until maybe we get that political moment.
That political moment meaning when the Congress votes on the debt ceiling?
When it becomes imminent. And we'll start hearing more about that in the next month or two because the Treasury Secretary will start issuing warnings. But right now, today, if you ask me, well, what's really going on, I would say everybody went on spring break with their kids. And I think that all the traders are on vacation. I know my son, a trader and financial guy, is on spring break with the kids. So I have a funny feeling that might be part of it.
Here's a question from one of our listeners. Please ask Terry, I just got $30,000 in a settlement. Where can I put it? Where's the best place to put it for growth?
Oh, okay, so you added that last little bit.
Yep.
So if you got $30,000 in a settlement, I don't know anything about you, but I'm going to say these following things. Number one, no matter what your age, if you have debt, because that's the subject of a new column I just posted today, pay down your credit card debt. Average rate on credit card debt now edged up over 20% annual APR. So the first thing you can do is pay down your debt. The second thing depends on where you are in life. Now, if you're 56 and you got this settlement, I'm not so sure you're worried so much about growth as you are about having that money. So I'd put half in T-bills, as we all know I've talked about, and maybe half in an equity income fund. But if you're 27 and you're working and you haven't opened an IRA, you can still open an IRA. You have, what is it, almost 2 weeks to do so. Call Fidelity or Vanguard and put the $6,000 you're allowed for last year. Mark that as a 2022 contribution. Assuming you don't have coverage at work, you'll be able to deduct that. And you can put another $6,000 in for 2023 right now, same asset allocation, half T-bills or money market in the IRA case and half in an equity income fund. And then stop and think about it. Think about the security of your job because you probably need a little cash cushion on the side for the economy I foresee coming ahead.
If I had... Well, you can answer this on the other side. Terry, I have a question about what you just said. My number is 312-981-7200. There is a phone line open for you to get in. Terry will answer your question. You can text it as well.
I just, during the break, pulled up a chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. If you ever want to do that, go to bigcharts.marketwatch.com. It's free. And I pulled up a chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Because we've been, you know, I was talking about wandering on a tightrope and where we are. And I pulled up a 10-year chart, And I said to myself, is this real? I looked at it three times. In the spring, before the pandemic, the Dow was trading around 28,000. That huge, you know, at the end of March, the world shutting down and the United States shutting down, the Dow hit 18,000. Right now, we're at 32,640. So mentally picture 28,000 down to 18,000 and a slow creep and crawl back up to January of last year was the high, and it was about 37,000, let's call it. And then it backed off just in December, the end of the year last year, back down to 28,000. Remember now, it was 28,000, had been growing for a decade, ever since 2008, 2009, that crisis, 28,000 down to 18,000, back up to 37,000, dropped off in late fall, just a little above 28,000, got over 34,000 in January. We're at 32,640. Now, in this last year, we've had the whole Russian invasion, the whole, oh my goodness gracious, there won't be any oil, there won't be any energy. We've had political upheaval. I mean, you all think about all the things that have gone on in the last year and a half. We are still at Dow 32,640, about 6,000, maybe a little less, from the all-time high, and about, I can't do this math,
14,000
above the moment when everybody said, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world, it's the pandemic. Sometimes a picture's worth a thousand words. I wish I could post it.
I drew it as you were doing it. I was actually graphing it. I just do a quick grid with the numbers in there. And you're right. That's if you just draw the line back recently as 3 years, it looks pretty good, Terry. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, man. So perspective, everybody. And yes, some 12 people said, what was that website? If you can you can just go to Big Charts, all one word, bigcharts.com. And it will get you to this division of MarketWatch, and it shows you all the major indices. And I always use the Dow because we all remember what it did today or yesterday or hope to do tomorrow.
Here's some questions for you, Terry.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My auto lease is about to end. Should I keep my lease and skip an auto purchase? Does Terry have any advice?
I do. It's probably at least a 2 or 3 year lease, and it was probably written when things were horrible in the economy, and when they thought, the lenders, that they would make a nice profit by putting a high residual value, the buyout price, that you would have to pay. Then, not so much now, the prices have backed off a bit, but in the last 6 months or so, there were no cars. Remember last year?
Yep.
So the price of used cars went up a lot.
Yep.
Backed off a little bit now. Number one, the price of this car, you can go check it out if it's a 2021, whatever it was, or 2019, whatever it was. Go to KBB.com, KellyBlueBook.com, and see what a good price for that car is if you were out to buy it. Probably you're getting a very good deal. Plus, you know it was only driven by you. You never had an accident. You changed the oil. You watched where you drove. So you are, if you buy it out now, which is typically not the case, you're probably about to get a very good deal. Don't finance it. Don't say, I'm going to extend the lease. That's not a good deal. They will rip you off for sure. They're so mad that they didn't get the value of the used car, which is so much higher. So go to your credit union if you're financing a used car. But this is a good time to buy the car you used.
Buy out the lease, yeah.
Off the lease.
For a six-month treasury bill, do you receive the entire interest rate payment at the end of the 6 months, or is it annualized?
No.
I'm going to finish the sentence. Meaning, if it is $100,000 invested in the interest rate at 5%, would you get the entire $5,000 after 6 months?
No. If it just happened to be exactly that, we haven't had 5%.
But you get the idea.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Okay. When you go online and create your Treasury Direct account and you say, I want to buy $100,000 of six-month T-bills next Monday, and let's just say it's not going to be, but next Monday was 5%. Then by Tuesday, you would notice that, how can I do this math, $99,000, half of the money, $2,500 of the interest you would have earned would be left in your checking account. So you just, all you had in there was $100,000.
Right.
$97,500 would have gone out to pay for the T-bills for the 6 months, and you got 6 months' interest up front, which you can now put in a money market fund and earn a little interest on. And if, let's say, you said, and by the way, automatically renew when they mature, and it happened to be 5% again, then you would find another $2,500 in interest dropped into your checking account that you link to it or your money market in 6 months. And at the end of the second maturity, you had said, nope, I want my money back. Then you would get your $100,000 back. But since the rates will be different, obviously, for the next 6 months, it'll be a little bit different. You get the interest up front and you pay taxes on the interest, only federal taxes, in the year in which the T-bill matures. So anything you buy now will mature in 2023. You'll get a 1099 in your account next January.
Let's start with Jack. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. What can we do for you, Jack?
I think a lot of people are confused about the quote-unquote interest, because it's not really interest you're getting. The example I would give, it's like if you were buying a $1 bill from Uncle Sam and it was at a 5% discounted rate, you're paying 95 cents to purchase the dollar, and you're getting that 5 cent differential as what everybody's referring to as interest. But the question I have is, when you go to the auctions, there's like a half dozen non-competitive auctions that you can choose from on the Treasury Direct. And my question is, how do you know which of the, if you got six auctions to choose from, how do you know which one to pick?
Okay, Jack. I'm not going to argue with you. It is interest you're getting. It's called interest. It's taxed as interest, and you're going to get a 1099 that reflects interest. But it is interest paid up front. So in that regard, you're absolutely correct. Like, remember the olden days, Series E savings bonds, which you bought for whatever it was, $12.50, and they matured to $25, and that amount, the additional amount, was interest. Okay, but it is interest you earn on T-bills. And you'll see a series of auctions for either the 13-week, and then below that, four or five auction dates for the 26-week. Now, suppose you had $100,000 and you only wanted to be in 13-week bills, but you didn't want to put it all in at once. So maybe you'd put $25,000 at the next upcoming auction. You have no idea what the rate will be, but it's only 3 or 4 days away, so you can look on CNBC, for instance, and see what the 13-week bill is trading at. It'll be around that. And then you say, well, wait, I'm going to buy $25,000 more 2 weeks later. So you pick that date, put in your order to buy $25,000 more at that auction, and so forth. So yeah, most people want to pick the next auction for either 13 or 26 week bills. They're auctioned on Mondays. 2-year treasury notes are auctioned once a month, so you have to, you'll see the next available date could be two or three weeks out. And that's how you pick. That's why there's a whole listing, because some people want to put their orders in and stagger them. Others just want the next Monday's auction for 13 or 26 week bills.
So is there only one? So, for example, this coming Monday, you're saying there's only one auction?
Yep.
For
only one
this
auction.
Coming Monday?
There's only one 13-week bill auction. Now, the big institutions, global banks, all put in bids, and they may get a slight range of yields, but individuals like us agree to accept the average yield that is set at that auction.
Good luck, Jack. I'm glad you called. That's a good question for a lot of us. Danny is next. You're on WGN. Danny, what can we do for you?
Yes, hi. I would like to ask her if she heard about the $2 bill, the value of it went up.
I'm going to go to money.org. You know, for a long time, in fact, I remember in our family someone gave away $2 bills for Christmas presents and holiday presents.
Yeah, my kids got a sheet of them.
And so you may have a little extra value as collector's values today. You may have a little extra value if you have a sheet and that is uncirculated. But I think I would send you to money.org, which is the website of the American Numismatic Association, and you can find a dealer near you and ask that question.
What did you see? They were
Thank
trading
you.
It. Okay, Danny. Yeah, good luck. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Lee next. You're on WGN. Hi, Lee.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air. What's your question for Terry?
I had an IRS payment plan about 3 years ago for some overdue taxes, and I entered into that payment plan, and I made a few monthly payments, and then I paid it off. The IRS sent me a letter saying I overpaid it. That was 2 years ago, and I have yet to receive the refund of the overpayment, and every time I contact the low-level agent, they take an hour to research it, and they say, yes, we see that the refund is in, but we can't process the payment yet. Call us back in a month. And I've been doing that for literally 2 years, and I want to know if there's anyone higher above that can execute this delivery.
Okay, I suggest you file Form 911. It's the Taxpayer Advocate Service Assistance.
That's okay. Not a joke. That's the actual form number?
No, it's seriously the number. If you go on IRS.gov and look up Taxpayer Advocate, and there's a form that you can fill out that says, here's what the situation is.
Yeah.
Now, they acknowledge that they owe you this, everybody who checks in into your account when you call in. One of the things you also might want to do, go to terrysavage.com. I can't get you there on the IRS website anymore because I've hidden the link, but it still works. On the right-hand side under links under Terry Savage is create an IRS ID Me account. That lets you establish an account that will let you see what the person on the other end of the phone when you call sees. So that's going to be a little bit helpful.
No kidding.
But I suggest you call and ask for Form 911, Request for Taxpayer Advocate Service Assistance.
Good luck, Lee. Thanks for the phone call.
It's hard to get through to them.
Tony, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. Tony, how can we help you?
Yes, I have a IRA account with a required distribution. I have always had enough cash in there to meet my requirements on a monthly basis, but now I'm running short of cash. I have to sell some assets. It's all stocks. Is it better to sell winners or better to sell losers or some kind of a blend?
That's such a great question. And, you know, the most critical thing is whatever you sell, don't look back. So there's a reason you own some of those stocks. The tax gains or losses from selling winners versus losers don't matter because all the money you withdraw is taxed as ordinary income. So did you pick those stocks yourself, Tony?
Yes, for the most part.
Okay. Well, here's the question you ask yourself. Do I sell 100 shares of this and kick myself if it goes up? Or should I sell 100 shares of that and be happy that I got out before it went down further?
Yeah, and absorb the loss.
There's no tax difference.
I've been on that merry-go-round for 10 years.
It's a purely emotional, psychological, I should say, question, because there is no financial difference between selling winners or losers. And the way to solve that problem is don't look back.
But that's great. That's just such an interesting question and answer. So either way, the money, regardless if it's generated as a result of a loss or profit, doesn't matter. It's still going to be counted as income. You don't get a discount because it was a loss. Did you say that, Terry?
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. And then just pretend like it's a new game. Do you want to liquidate this stock or do you want to keep this stock and ride it out? That's the question to ask yourself. Okay. I think I got it. We've got more business news, too. And this is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Single-family home values in the Chicago area shot up 4.8% in January compared to a year ago. That's according to the latest S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index. It's the first time in about a half decade that Chicago home prices outpaced the national average. In this case, it's a full 1% higher than the national average, which came in at 3.8%. Prices had been growing at about half the national average. The new data suggests the local housing market is more resilient than the other big cities surveyed. NASCAR has landed another big founding corporate partner for its street race in Chicago this summer. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois joins McDonald's as a founding partner. Together, they are two of Chicago's biggest companies. NASCAR says Blue Cross will get official presenting, marketing, and promotional rights, along with branding all over the race's footprint. The Grant Park 220 and the Loop 121 races will be July 1st and 2nd. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's check traffic now. This is Mary Vandeveld.
Watch for an accident on the inbound side of the Eisenhower at First Avenue. Left lane is blocked now. It's about 35 minutes heading in from Mannheim. No outbound delays. The inbound Kennedy from O'Hare, it's 50 minutes. 34 from the Edens. Solid in from Montrose, 28 outbound to the airport. Edens looking good. Stevenson about 22 out to the tri-state. Southbound 55 before 53. Still have an accident in the right lane and heavy in Carroll Stream at Army Trail and County Farm Road with an accident there. Mary Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
Let's update you on the markets with Bob Kessler.
They're still up. The Dow has gained about 0.6%, 210 points, 32,606. S&P 500's up a little more than 1%, 40 points at 4012. NASDAQ's up 1.3%, 152 points at 11,868.
And now the much-anticipated business of food with Steve Alexander.
And heavy-duty thanks to the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Identify yourself, please.
Sure. My name is Brooke Bestwina, and I'm the owner of the feed store in Summit, Illinois.
Brooke and her sister Blair Gibson are up to here with baby chicks and ducks, freshly hatched and ready to be raised, but please.
These animals are not stuffed animals. They have to be taken care of.
But every year at Easter, cuteness overrules common sense.
Easter is a time when people just want a chick or a duck, but people don't usually realize how much mess they're going to cause. You know, these are livestock or barnyard animals, basically.
And another thing to consider is that these chicks and ducks are so cute when they're tiny, but they don't stay that way.
Ducks especially grow very, very, very fast. They will double in size almost every week. And, you know, that little cage or wherever you're going to keep them is probably not the ideal situation for ducks that grow as fast as they do.
And did we mention they make a mess?
Ducks are very, very, very cute, but they're very, very, very messy. They are waterfowl, so they eat water, they poop water, they play in the water. Everything they do is mud and muck with ducks.
And if you go to the feed store looking for an Easter chick or duck, there's a chance you could go home empty-handed.
And that's what we're here for, to stop people from just impulse buying these animals. We really want you to do your research, and if you seem like you're not having the best interest of the animal at heart, then we will refuse the sale. It's not a stuffed animal, like I said. It does need to be humanely treated and taken care of, and that turns into us taking a lot of these birds back if people can't take care of them.
So, here's an idea.
Come and visit us and stick your head in the cage where the ducks are and take a big whiff and watch my employees clean the duck pan, because that's basically where you're going to end up.
They're open every day except Wednesdays.
We're always here to answer questions, and if you do want to bring your grandchild to just see a baby duck, we could probably take one out of the brooder and let them hold it, but you don't have to take it home with you if you're not ready for it.
Brooke Bestwina from the feed store in Summit. From the farm to your belly, today is National Pita Day. It's also National Lemon Chiffon Cake Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
TerrySavage.com. Anything you want to say before we pick up more lines?
I had time to do some research. Here's something you can mention at the dinner table tonight. The $2 bills started in 1862 with Hamilton on the front, and then quickly switched to Jefferson, our third president. They stopped printing them in 1966 for a decade, and then started again in 1776 in honor of the 200th anniversary of our nation. They cost 5 cents to make, the same as a $1 bill. So the Treasury likes making them. It's still making them. But they are so rare, they're 1% of all our paper bills. And yes, you can get them today. They don't circulate, but you can always get them from a bank. There
any
you go,
idea?
$2 bill. And they're not rare. I haven't seen anything that says there's any particular rarity, but people like to collect them for their birth date or something like that.
So they're still worth about $2.
$2. Exactly.
This is Mark. You're on WGN Radio with Terry Savage. Mark, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, I'm retired. I'm 70 years old. I've been doing Roth IRA conversions for a couple of years now for my wife and myself, for roughly $40,000 or so for each of us. Is this something Terry thinks is still a good idea?
Well, you have to look at your own tax picture. Right now, you're adding the amount you convert to your ordinary income? Is it impacting the premiums you pay for Medicare Part B? It might.
No.
And now, by the way, you're only 70. You don't have to start withdrawing from your traditional IRAs until you're 73. So it's a good time to sit down and assess whether at some point down the road you think you might be earning less on that. Those withdrawals from the traditional IRA that will start when you're 73 might be even taxed at a lower rate. So you have to look that over with your tax advisor.
Okay, yeah, I've just been trying to maintain myself in the tax bracket that I'm currently in, not jumping to the next one. And so far, I've been good at doing
that. Exactly, that's critical.
Yeah, well, that sounds like...
And again, your Medicare premium bracket is also what's important there.
Distribution is as important, hopefully, for people as saving, isn't it, Terry?
You know, it's interesting when you're young and you don't have any money to save and you say, oh, how can I even $20 or $100 a week make a difference? You don't see it happening. And then time does its magic. And over 30, 40, 50 years, it's a lot of money. And then you have to pay attention to how you withdraw it. You're right.
For Terry, are there tax implications for scholarships a student gets as a graduate assistant? This student works for college in exchange for tuition and room and board. Does that count as income, Terry?
It depends on how that scholarship is structured. So you have to ask your bursar whether that's going to be taxable as income to you or if it's a trade. I can't give you an answer on that.
That's a good question, too. It may depend on the school or the kind of scholarship. Okay. How about this? If a CD or T-bill rate for 6 months and 1 year on a 2 year is the same, are there pros or cons picking one over the other, aside from the fact that I might need the funds sooner?
Okay. This is a question of two things. Liquidity, you nailed that, John. You get an A for that part of it.
Thank you.
The second question is, it's like that Clint Eastwood thing, do you feel lucky? Do you think today with your $20,000, and let's just say you could get just under 5% for 6 months, do you think the Fed's going to keep raising rates and that 6 months from now, the rates will be higher when you go to renew? Yeah, the Fed's mean, the economy's, you know, they're worried about they're going to fight inflation, or whoa, wait a minute, there's a lot of damage in the economy, banks are holding back now because they've got their own problems, probably the economy will slow, probably rates will be lower. So the real multi-gazillion dollar game out there in the world called the bond market, the U.S. bond market is. So when do you lock in for a longer term? Silicon Valley Bank made the stupidest mistake. They had the cash and they locked in 10-year various forms of U.S. government IOUs, mortgage-backed securities at interest rates of only 2%. Now, interest rates on 10 years are getting up towards 4%. So you really feel like a dummy if you locked in for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and then rates keep going up. But nobody knows.
Well,
so that's why you spread it out.
But I do.
You get some 6 months and
ask
some 2 years.
What the Fed's going to do.
What's the Fed going to do?
I don't know. But when answer this.
Okay.
When do they? When's the next time that they decide?
In May.
May.
We skip a month here, so
March,
it'll be May.
April, May. They're going to raise another quarter point in May.
Well, watch this, okay? Here's the argument. Yeah, probably they will. They said they were likely to. But what's happened now is, remember, everybody looked at Silicon Valley Bank and said, oh my goodness, they made some big mistakes on their balance sheet. Now they're looking at all the other banks. And the banks are going, if you're a banker, you're the president of the bank, you go, you know what? Let's keep some stuff short term here. Let's not put out any loans now. And as credit dries up and tightens up, that would slow the economy even more than another 0.25% increase.
Yeah.
And so if the economy slows and you suddenly start seeing numbers in the next 2 months, we don't know what they'll do in 2 months. But the fact is, there's an argument to be made. A lot of big commercial mortgages, you're going to hear this, all those downtown office buildings where they can't get people to go back to work, all of a sudden they are not worth as much as they used to be. They can't raise their rents. They have clients who are just walking out and saying, well, sublease it, I don't care, sue me. So the banks that hold those commercial loans are also going to feel the pinch. So there's an argument to be made that this recession that we all were waiting for consumers to fall into, they'd be out of work. They wouldn't get it, you know, they couldn't keep up with inflation. They'd pull back. Their confidence is still pretty strong. But now you get the banking world going, oops, And maybe that's what leads to the recession sooner rather than later and creates its own reason for lower interest rates.
30 seconds left, Terry. Hey, Terry, I began day trading in 2021 and earned a profit of $140,000 that year. Then I lost most of it in 2022. I work as a sole proprietor home inspector. Should I file taxes as a day trader to claim those losses and potentially offset my income from my home inspecting?
You know what? I'm going to let you talk to your tax consultant about how you file those losses. But I was just about to say, that's not what I thought the question would be. I've been around the trading floors. I was a founding member of the Chicago Board Options Exchange. It opened in April of 73. I don't know any old day traders. I know a lot of wealthy people who've made money and managed to keep it in the markets, but typically not because they were day traders. I think you have the odds stacked against you. You have to be right about when to get in, right about when to get out, when to get back in again. So talk taxes with your tax advisor. Depends on the percentage of income and so forth. But I just don't recommend that as a career unless you've had a good EKG beforehand and you've prepaid your rent for a year.
Career or hobby.